The Bastards of Boston Baseball Podcast.
Back to Folk. Red Sox fans have longed to hear it. The Boston Red Sox are world champion. Game over, series over, and the Red Sox are world champs again.
Yes, indeed. Here it comes. Another edition of the Bastards of Boston Baseball.
Welcome everyone to another episode of the Bastards of Boston Baseball, and welcome into the inaugural episode of Clown Takes. So obviously, following the Boston Red Sox, they generate a lot of controversy, differing opinions from members of the Boston media, members from podcasts all around Boston, and we all give our takes on this show, but occasionally we see takes on Twitter, or we hear takes on radio and TV that kind of make us go, really? You really going with that? So for once, we're going to turn the tables. A lot of people like to come at us. We're going to give you some clown takes that we found from Twitter, other various sources, and we're going to call some people out because, you know what? Feels good to be on the other end of it every now and then. So welcome into the initial episode of Clown Takes. I am your host, Jason Kelly, coming to you from Canton, Massachusetts. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at Color of the Iris. If you want to find the podcast account, you can find us at Bastards_Boston. Joining me on the show from Reading, Pennsylvania is Micah Storms. Micah, how we doing?
I'm doing well. This could be an interesting episode for me because I feel like I'm probably one of the least controversial members of the Bastards account, so I try to usually stay out of that type of stuff, but I kind of am intrigued by this. And the one I chose, the minute I saw it, I'm like, this is ridiculous. So I'm excited to give my take on this clown take.
Yeah, it's okay. We'll teach you. We'll teach you. Terry and I are seasoned veterans at this, so we'll kind of help you along.
I kind of got that feeling when I started, but the more I've been doing this, I really have I wouldn't say you've rubbed off on me, but I feel like I'm willing to be a little bit more combatant.
I like it. And where can people find you on Twitter?
They can find me at Ballpark Buzz.
Awesome. And also with us on the show is Terry Cushman. Terry, how's it going?
Ready to clown some people. And as Micah was saying, I think the correct term is we have bastardized him, and here we go. But it's important. Sometimes the good cop, bad cop thing, you know, is effective. And Jason and I are bad cop. Mike is good cop. You know, it's just how it goes. We're still going to enforce stuff, but our delivery is different. I can be found at Cushman MLB. The podcast account is at Bastards_Boston. And several months ago now, at some point in the winter, I have a Facebook account that is baseball only. You can find that. The name of that is Terry Talks Sox. And if you follow me on Twitter, it's the same stuff. So you don't necessarily have to follow. This is for the Facebook only crowd that doesn't want to cross over to Twitter, which, as Jason said in the last episode, can be a bit of a cesspool. So yeah, let's clown some people.
Yeah, let's get into it. So, Micah, we're going to put you in the leadoff spot. So who are you clowning this week?
All right, well, the guy I chose, he really just sometimes puts tweets out there, I think, to just really cause chaos. Some have been fans because he's been critical of the team, but this tweet just so ridiculous. So I'm going to clown Tony Maserati. He tweeted based on last night's game, and it all had to do with the catch made by Sadown Rafaela in the 11th inning. But here was his take. It's a two-parter. So the first part said, In past years, the Red Sox didn't have a center fielder who could make this catch, especially with the game on the line. I don't necessarily disagree with that because the Red Sox haven't had a great defensive center fielder, but he did say, which is really more of an indictment on the Sox of 22 and 23. Now, when you put the 22 date, you're completely disregarding the fact that Jackie Bradley Jr. was the center fielder. And there's no doubt in my mind that Jackie Bradley Jr., when he was on the team in 22, could have and probably would have made that play that Sadon Rafaela made. So, you know, again, I was fine with the initial part of the tweet, but when you put the date, you have to remember who was the center fielder. And Bradley Jr. was one of the best center fielders that the Red Sox have ever had defensively. Offensively, I'm not going to argue anything in terms of that. That guy couldn't hit himself out of a brown paper bag sometimes, but defensively, he was as good as it gets. So when he puts that date in there, I can't take him serious. And then he says, is it a good catch? Sure. But most legitimate major league center fielders make it. The Red Sox finally have one. I have a hard time believing the fact that most legitimate major league center fielders make that, because if you look at the numbers on the ball that was put in play, the expected batting average was 830 on that fly ball or line drive, whatever you want to call it. 830. That is insane. That basically means it's a hit every single time when it's 830. And then the hit probability was 83%. So you're going to basically say, was it a good catch? Sure. No, that was a fantastic catch. And he's downplaying the fact that Rafaela, you know, he really should have gave him so much more credit. Was it a good catch? No, it was a great catch. Okay, there was very little chance of him actually catching it based on the numbers, based on where he had to go. And I have no time for something like that. That was strictly put out there to draw in fans and say, oh, look at this. We finally have a center fielder. He's not wrong. It's been a little while since the Red Sox had a defensive center fielder like this. But he should have just said based on last year, what we saw, because last year there were so many issues, but you can't forget about JBJ, which he clearly did. And then calling it a good catch and that most center fielders would catch that, I'm calling complete bull on that. I really am. I would love for him to list the center fielders that make that catch. I don't know how many do. He got a great jump on it. It was over his head in the gap. He had to spin in while the ball was in the air. It was terrific. It really was. To call it a good catch, that's a clown take, in my opinion.
Terry, what do you think?
Maserati doesn't – I mean, he's got a long history of not picking the right battles. You know, he'll throw something out there just for the sake of it. I get accused of that occasionally, but I really truly believe I'm keeping it real and I'm talking about an issue that's relevant and at the forefront. But I mean, if was it Langeliers that hit that? Do you guys remember? He's their catcher. It was. Yeah. So he's one of their better power hitters, and you know, that's to the deepest part of the one of the biggest ballparks in MLB. And the catch probability, as Micah said, was pretty low. And we're still getting to know Rafaela. So the fact that we don't know if he can make that play, we keep hearing he's very good, but we're used to Jackie Bradley, who's probably the best center fielder I've ever seen, if I'm being completely honest. Not only for his range to run down, you know, those deep fly balls, but his cannon of an arm, you know, I think Bradley's the best I've ever seen. So we're kind of just starting to see it now with Rafaela, and it was an extremely dramatic moment because number one, can he catch it? Number two, is it even going to stay in the park? So to pick that battle in a catch that saved the game. I mean, well, I shouldn't say save the game. It would have been tied, and then Langeliers probably would have been on third base, you know, by the end of it. But it helped seal the win, I guess, is the better way to put it. I don't know, man. Just you got to pick your battles a little bit better.
I agree. Yeah, he does pick some weird battles, and I think this is another example of Maz has gotten a little cushy with the radio gig, and I don't think that he is as laser focused on baseball as he used to be. I think it's because he has to cover all different sports now. And I think he's much more become focused on like the Patriots and football than he has the Red Sox and he has the sport of baseball. Because what you said about the expected batting average, I mean, that's the number one thing to point out. 830 and an 83% chance of it being a hit, that means it's a great catch. That's not something any common outfielder makes a catch on. Willy Abreu is not making that catch. I'm not even sure Jaron Duran is making that catch. And he's got really good speed, but he's not going to get the jump that Rafael is going to get. So it was a really great catch. And yeah, I just think Maz was trying to, you know, just trying to poke the bear a little bit and, you know, just try to find something because, you know, the Red Sox are in Oakland. They're playing a crap team. Of course, they're going to sweep them. So, you know, he's down on the team. So, okay, let's find something to jab people about. I think that's all it was. But yeah, I think it's just another example of him not quite knowing the game as much as he used to, because I'm not even sure he really knew what expected batting average, how to really calculate that, and what it really means. So I think it was a weird hill to die on. I agree with you on that. The only thing I'll push back on is when you said, well, you can't forget about Jackie Bradley Jr. And I refute that because I spend every day of my life trying to forget that Jackie Bradley Jr. ever played for this team. So I refute you on that one point, but otherwise, I think you're spot on. Yeah, it was definitely a clown take from Tony.
You can't deny, though, Jason. You cannot deny he was amazing defensively. You can't deny it.
Yeah.
Come on.
He was good. Yeah. He had a cannon of an arm. He didn't know where the ball was going half the time. But, yeah, he did have a cannon of an arm. You're right. Yeah. Wasn't exactly laser point accuracy, but, you know, that's okay. You know, it was fun, but you know, he still hit like 186 and was just terrible. And, you know, was part of a lot of bad Red Sox seasons. So just, sorry, I can't get past that, but you're right. Yeah. He was good defensively. Terry, send us home. Who are you clowning this week?
I am going to clown perhaps my biggest hater on Twitter. Now, this started out with my own take, and then he took an issue with it, and then we were off to the races. So this was what my take was, and this was on March 30th, so I think that was on Saturday or Sunday when I posted it. But I put Craig Breslow at the top. I put that name because I want, you know, when people get to the tweet to know that that's what it's kind of going to be about. And then I said, after watching George Kirby dominate the Red Sox last night, it's crazy that Breslow seemingly thought he could trade for George Kirby without including one of his big three prospects. So those three prospects, Meyer, Teal, and Anthony. So as far as my take goes, you're not getting Kirby or anybody on that level without giving up at least one of those guys. One of those guys will be in the trade. So that's all I was saying. That tweet on Twitter was viewed just under 30,000 times. And nobody really took a huge issue with it except for one person. And his name is Matt Couture. And with my haters, I refer to it as playing patty cakes with them. And so I refer to Matt Couture as Matty Cakes. And he kind of, I'm not going to get into that part of it, but he did kind of, you know, voice some displeasure about that. But anyway, so here's what Matty Cakes responded with. He goes, "Do you have any actual evidence he really thought this?" Like, so he's taken the position that Breslow's not delusional. He knows he has to give up one of those guys. And then I gave a screenshot of an article from a guy named Alex Speer. Perhaps you guys have heard of him. I don't know if Matty Cakes has, But it was just a snippet that said the Red Sox reportedly have spoken to the Seattle Mariners about a trade for either George Kirby or Logan Gilbert, but were shut down, according to the Boston Globe's Alex Beer. So I provided some semblance of proof there from a very credible Boston media figure. And Matty Cakes responded, he goes, "This shows interest in Gilbert," and then goes on and on. And what I should have said was, "Why is George Kirby's name in there?" You know, and I didn't. And it goes on and on. And then finally, I took a another screenshot. We were debating it for a while. And the next screenshot basically confirms that the Red Sox never at any point over the winter showed any willingness to trade any of their big three. So I've kind of connected the dots there for Matty Cakes. I've shown that they were interested, you know, with an actual report. And then I've shown a separate report saying, and that wasn't good enough for him. He cried foul, said, "You can't use two separate reports to prove your theory in your one tweet." And you know, it is what it is. And then he tried changing the subject. So Matty Cakes is one of those obsessive haters I have. And the hilarious thing is on the day Heim Bloom got fired, Matty Cakes unfollowed me on Twitter. And despite doing that, he incessantly stalks my profile and quote tweets me. He doesn't even follow me. I don't follow him. And I'm like, well, if you're going to be that obsessive, why did you even unfollow me? If I'm on your brain that much, if I'm taking up that much real estate in your head, he's a realtor, by the way, so he should know a thing about real estate. But so, yeah, so he just constantly, not constantly, but often enough quote tweets me. And how often do you think I go on his threads? Never, ever. Never, ever. It's always him coming at me. It's always him coming at me. And then shortly after, his pants promptly go right to the ground. And it is what it is. It got to the point where I think he was expecting me to acquire the text transcripts between Craig Breslow and the Mariners. I think that's where he needed me to go. That was the level of proof that I needed to appease him. And then before I hand it to you guys, I just want to point out that he was at pains all winter to say that it wasn't Bloom's fault, it was Henry doing this and that. And to some degree, that's true. But for him to take exception, you know, of that tweet I had about Kirby and Breslow, he's defending the same failed strategy anyway that got Bloom fired. So you can't have it both ways, Matty Cakes. So anyway.
Micah, what do you think?
I guess my question is, how often do teams say, "Here was the deal that never happened"? Like, does that ever happen? Do we ever get, "It was Marcelo Mayer for George Kirby, straight up, and the Mariners said no"? Like, are those types of things ever actually out there? Because I feel like the answer to that question is no. So it's like, if you're not going to get like complete confirmation that this was the deal and it was declined, what's wrong with, you know, putting the dots together? Why can't we do that? It's for fun. If Terry's wrong by assuming that, then it doesn't even harm anybody. But if you put the pictures that Terry put together of the quotes, it sure seems like it's almost like a perfect puzzle piece. And it seems like they go together and you could make the connection. So I feel like the odds of Terry being correct with his assumption are much, much, much higher than the odds of that being incorrect. It seems too good to be true based on what we know. So I think it has to be correct. And to say there's no way to prove that. And then to say that George Kirby, it wasn't about George Kirby, it was about Logan Gilbert, that doesn't make any sense, because I'm pretty sure the Mariners probably feel the same way about Kirby and Gilbert at the same, like, I feel like they feel very similar about those two pitchers. They probably value Kirby a little bit more. So it just doesn't make sense to me. I think you're more than accurate to make those assumptions. You provided the correct evidence. You cited your source. So it seems like a legitimate paper. If I was grading that, because, you know, I'm a teacher, if I was grading that, I would accept those sources. I don't see a problem with it. That seems like a ridiculous counter argument that he was making. I actually didn't really see much of a counter argument other than provide text messages between Jerry DePoto and Craig Breslow. That's what I was expecting. Yeah, that's what he wanted. So I'm not sure if Terry has that type of clearance.
Nope. And I don't have any hacker friends either. But just to kind of clarify, you were basically alluding to this. It wasn't like I made a huge leap, you know. I wasn't like introducing a conspiracy theory, you know. It was logic based on reports, and that's all it was. And Matty Cakes got triggered really bad for some reason.
This guy has smartest guy in the room syndrome in the worst way. I mean, what you mentioned, that he doesn't even follow you, but he still goes out of his way to search you on Twitter, go to your profile, scroll through your tweets, find one that he doesn't like, quote tweet it, and then go, show me evidence. What are you talking about? And it's like, it was a report written by Alex Speer. It was in written form by Alex Speer that, like, these were two names that were mentioned. So you made an assumption that, like, well, okay, George Kirby's name is in there. And he's going, well, no, you're wrong. It's like, no, it's written right there in front of you, you idiot. Like, what else do you need to see? Like, does he need to take it up with Alex Speer too? Is he going to quote tweet him? Be like, I didn't like that article, because, you know, whatever. And it's like, this guy just, when you look at his profile, it is just him going through and quote tweeting, like, anyone he can find about any sport, NFL. Like, he's all about the NFL draft. So any tweet he can find about the NFL draft, like, well, you know, some talking animal will say, if I were the Vikings and Patriots, I would do this trade. And he'll quote him, be like, I wouldn't do that. Here's what I would do instead. And it's like, dude, nobody cares. You're not that important. You're not Bill Simmons. You're not Colin Cowherd. You're not Stephen A. Smith. Nobody values your sports opinions as much as you think they do. And it's like, he does. He thinks he's the smartest guy in the room. And, you know, everything he says is gold. And everything anyone else says, he's got to quote tweet and disagree with. I'm surprised he's a realtor. Does he have time to show homes when he's on Twitter all day just quote tweeting? I mean, seriously, like, does he show any houses, or does he just like go through the house like, oh yeah, there's a kitchen, and he's just on Twitter like quote tweeting and arguing with people? Like, does this guy do anything else with his day? It's kind of pathetic. I mean, seriously, it's so bad. So I think the dude's a clown. I mean, again, just, you go through his profile. It's like, dude, yeah, send out another mock draft. You've only sent out about 37 of them. You want to try another one? And, you know, maybe one of them will be right, because that's what he's going to do. One of them will be right. And then he'll tweet it on draft and be like, oh, see? Yep, I had it. I'm so glad these teams followed my instructions. Yep, I had it right from day one. It's like, it's so childish. It's so pathetic. I'm actually not surprised the guy's a realtor. It kind of makes a lot of sense when you think about it, because he thinks he's hot, you know what. So it just, you know what, keep just not following us, but stalking us all day, dude. If that's what fulfills your day, Matt, just stalking the Bastards account, stalking Terry's account. I'm sure he's gonna come after me and Micah now, because he's gonna listen to the episode and he's gonna rewind, like, where are their Twitter handles again? He's gonna plug it into his phone and he's gonna bookmark it and just, you know, every day go through our tweets, be like, nope, you're wrong, nope, this is wrong. So you know what, if that's what fulfills your day, have a blast, dude. Have a blast. That is, you're right, that he's a clown.
He's a content creator like we are. And I mean, he's just started, doesn't seem to have a ton of traction from, you know, what I can tell. And if you're going to do what we do, you have to keep it real. if you're going to try to go out there, if you're going to get offended by certain narratives and, you know, if your strategy is to out homer all the other podcasts, you're not going to make it. It's just not, there's all that content's already out there, you know, and the massive edge that we as a podcast have over so many others is that we do keep it real. We are perhaps a little bit more critical, but at the same time, we're accountable and, you know, and we own it when we're off about something. So, you know, that's, you know, speaks to the core of credibility and, you know, we're crushing it and, you know, people like him are going to learn the hard way eventually that they've been doing it wrong the whole time. And, you know, that's that.
Yep. I mean, it's very easy to just spew takes and, you know, just not back up anything and not be accountable. It's much harder to do, you know, what we do, which is just, hey, we give an honest take and then if it backfires, we go, oops, okay, wrong about that one. You know, like my Tristan Casas take from last year, I'm still owning that one because I was at April, May. I was like, send him down. He's not ready. Send him down. You know, I still have to be like, yep, nope, my bad. I was wrong. So, but that's the difference. You're right. That's just the difference. So
what is so wrong with saying that? Like, I could easily say right now, I was wrong. Like, I have no problem saying that. Jaren Duran, I was wrong about trading him. What, how hard is that?
Yeah, Micah, it takes this really, this very rare thing. It's begins with an H. Oh, it's called humility. Yeah, that's what it takes. Yeah, it's, I think all three guys we mentioned on this show, they don't really quite have that much humility. So, so when they're wrong, it's more just deny, accuse, you know, don't actually accept that you were wrong. Don't take accountability. It's just, you know, just yell the clouds even louder, I think. So it's not hard. It's not hard for us, but it's hard for them. So I think that's what we've learned, and we will wrap on that. So inaugural Clown Takes episode in the books. I'm sure there'll be more to come because you people just can't help yourselves, and that's okay. It gives us something to do. So we're happy with that. So hope you all enjoyed it. Enjoy the Angel series this weekend, and we'll be back with you guys next week. Everybody, take care.